Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Nada Hashmi, who is the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. He's the author of The People Reloaded, The Green Movement and the Struggle for Iran's Future, and The Syria Dilemma. And his latest book is Sectarianization, Mapping the New Politics of the Middle East. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nada Hashmi.
Thank you, Ian.
And on Saturday, before the MEC, the band previously banned or designated by the United States as a terrorist organization, the group MEK, Majidil Haq, they're pretty much a front group for the group that Rudy Giuliani spoke to on Saturday in Washington. They've been very generous with their money. They've bought off a lot of U.S. politicians, both on the Republican and Democratic side, some prominent people. So I imagine Rudy Giuliani got well paid for his presentation on Saturday.
He was rewarded handsomely, I think, by his affiliation, both in the past and the present, with this organization called the MEK, which your listeners should know is really a discredited Iranian cult with close ties to the regime of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and now is effectively bankrolled by the Saudis and benefits from the political organizational network of right-wing pro-Israel supporters in the United States to be able to, you know, reach people like Rudolph Giuliani and John Bolton, the new national security advisor to Donald Trump.
Well, John Bolton's had long-standing ties to the MEK, has he not?
That's true. Actually, I would point out to your listeners just before you called me, Ian, that the New York Times has just put up a very, I think, informative and educational four-minute video explainer called MEK, the group that John Bolton wants to rule Iran. And I encourage people to look at it because it's a very nice summary of what this organization stands for, and they actually showed John Bolton at their one of their meetings, openly calling for regime change, and you know next year we'll meet in Tehran, and so he's probably one of the most prominent American foreign policy individuals that has deep ties to this extremist cult, and the New York Times video does I think a pretty good job in explaining how deep the ties actually go.
Right, but isn't this Ahmad Chalabi all over again? Chalabi being this disgraced and discredited front man that the neocons in this country thought was going to be the Nelson Mandela of Iraq and that they were going to install him after they kicked Saddam out. And of course, he turned out to end up being an Iranian agent all along. But again, the stupidity and the narrow zealotry of the neocons seems to blind them to who these people are, or are they just simply corrupt? I mean, Giuliani's been getting, I think he got 20, 30,000 last time he spoke to MEC, so he's probably got more on Saturday.
It is very much like Ahmad Chalabi. In fact, I would say it's actually much worse than Ahmad Chalabi. Chalabi didn't have, you know, the same type of history of, you know, of killing people, of promoting a really extremist interpretation of Islam and, you know, doing the type of really crazy things that the MEK are known for. So I think it's actually much worse. And the second point that you mentioned, Ian, I think is, connected to broader themes that are very much central to U.S. politics today, the deep corruption of our own political system that allows private interest groups to effectively buy political influence in Washington, D.C. And this, you know, touches many issues, not just U.S. foreign policy toward Iran. It touches questions of gun control and the NRA. It touches the question of the Israel-Palestine conflict and the, you know, influence that the AIPAC has on our elected officials. So, you know, those are some of the underlying themes that tie all of these issues together. And I think effectively, you know, you're right. People like Giuliani, people like, I think, John Bolton are fundamentally corrupt. I think there's a difference between Giuliani and actually Bolton. I think actually Bolton ideologically believes that the MEK represents some sort of democratic opposition. Rudolph Giuliani, you know, I think as most people realize now, it's just simply a blatantly corrupt politician. You know, he was on the payroll of, you know, Recep Tayyip Erdogan not too long ago in Turkey, who is, you know, comes out of an Islamic sort of background, political background, and he was willing to do bidding. This is Rudolph Giuliani. He was willing to do bidding for, you know, the president of Turkey if he could, if Giuliani could sort of help arrange via General Michael Flynn the kidnapping of the Turkish, you know, religious leader Fethullah Gulen, who lives in Pennsylvania. So Giuliani is just corrupt. I don't think he has any political principles. But I think John Bolton is a combination of not just being corrupt, but also deep ideological positions here that line him up with the MEK and their sort of very paranoid worldview with respect to internal Iranian politics.
And again, I'm speaking with Nada Hashemi, who is the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. He's the author of The People Reloaded, The Green Movement and the Struggle for Iran's Future, and The Syria Dilemma. And his latest book is Sectarianization, Mapping the New Politics of the Middle East. Well, at this rally, or whatever you want to call it, on Saturday in Washington, Rudolph Giuliani said that regime change in Iran, quote, is the only way to achieve peace in the Middle East, and that President Trump, quote, is as committed to regime change as we are. And then he went on to say, with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on his right side and National Security Advisor John Bolton on his left side, what do you think is going to happen to that agreement, referring to the JCPOA, the P5+1 agreement, which I think is all but inevitable that Trump's going to pull out of it on Saturday?
Well, actually, he announced today that 2 o'clock tomorrow is when he's going to make his announcement, Eastern Standard Time. So I think you're absolutely right. The deal is effectively dead. But I think the statement by Giuliani gives you an insight into what the Trump administration and the Trump administration's foreign policy advisors are actually thinking about U.S.-Iran policy. I think they very much have, you know, a regime change mandate in mind that they're hoping to, I think, move forward. And this will probably, you know, manifest itself in many different ways, probably funding and trying to support, you know, ethnic and religious groups in Iran that are upset with the status quo within Iran to try and foment destabilization on Iran's borders. It will probably result in more money for groups like the MEK. And fundamentally, it's really a disaster for the people of Iran. As I tweeted earlier this morning, the brutal irony of Giuliani's speech over the weekend is that it will have the exact opposite effect for the Iranian people. In other words, what Giuliani and Trump and Bolton are dreaming up right now will effectively embolden hardliners in Iran and undermine the work of genuine Iranian dissidents, reformists, and pro-democracy advocates in Iran. And so if you just actually speak to them, as I often do, they will tell you this, that this type of rhetoric from Giuliani, this embrace of the MEK, the tearing up of the Iran nuclear deal, is all a disaster for the possibilities of internal political change in Iran. That is, I think, very widespread, and I think many people in Iran desperately want political change, but they want it on their own terms, they want it nonviolently, and they don't want it as a result of the statements of a very corrupt New York politician such as Rudolph Giuliani.
Well, we have examples of, for example, in Armenia, there's an extremely effective people's revolution going on that's joyful. Now, I'm not suggesting, as you've written the book about the People Reloaded, the Green Movement and the Struggle for Iran's Future, how the young Iranians and the women in particular rose up and were shot in the streets by the Pasdaran, the militias associated with the Supreme Leader and the Quds forces and the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guard Corps. And of course, you've seen thousands of young Iranians demonstrating against the government who want to impede their access to social media, just as the same has been happening in Russia, as a matter of fact. So those regimes in many ways are similar. But Rouhani's making these dire warnings to the United States. Is that to say that he sees the writing on the wall, that his fate is tied up as well? Because not that you can do anything to change Trump's mind. Already Merkel has tried, already Macron has tried, and today Boris Johnson is trying, the British foreign minister. They're getting nowhere. So let's just address what Rouhani is signaling here. What do you make of his dire warnings?
Yeah, I think he's officially sort of sending a message to the United States that this withdrawal from the nuclear agreement will have drastic consequences for the entire world, including the United States. What that actually means in terms of how Iran will respond to the nuclear deal, we don't know yet. But I think you're absolutely right, Ian, to point to the fact that Rouhani's, I think, political career is very much tied up to the future of the Iran nuclear agreement. And if Trump pulls out, then that effectively means that Rouhani's key foreign policy position and most popular sort of, you know, argument that he made that effectively got him elected was that, you know, he could restore Iran's economic viability, he could bring Iran out of isolation. The defeat of the Iran nuclear agreement effectively means that Hassan Rouhani is a lame duck president, his political career is absolutely over, and he knows it. And so I think that's why he's making these statements. Going back to what you said a moment ago in terms of the demonstrations in Armenia and the desire for political change in Iran in 2009 and the repression of the regime, there is deep discontent in Iran. There's a deep desire for political change. And sadly, what I'm seeing now is that the Trump administration, led by Giuliani and Bolton, using the rhetoric of regime change, are effectively going to try and hijack this very genuine domestic demand within Iran for political change by tainting it, by, in fact, giving an argument to Iranian hardliners to accuse every single opposition figure in Iran, every single human rights activist, tainting that person with being an agent of Giuliani, an agent of Trump, an agent of the United States. And the irony, I think, of what we're seeing right now with these statements from the Trump administration, the tearing up of the nuclear agreement, the embracing of this Iranian cult known as the MEK, is that all of these things are actually playing out in ways that strengthen the hardliners in Iran and undermine the efforts of pro-democracy activists within Iran. They actually extend the shelf life of the Islamic Republic. And you just have to talk to them, and they'll tell you that the nuclear agreement was widely supported, overwhelmingly supported by Iranian civil society, because they felt that the creating conditions that prevented a war that increased the economic prospects for the Iranian middle class, which is the core of the pro-democracy movement, over the long period will actually help the efforts of Iranian dissidents and Iranian, you know, pro-democracy activists. So if you put this all together, Ian, it's actually a colossal disaster for the people of Iran, and it's ironically, you know, actually a blessing in disguise for Iranian hardliners who actually are happy to hear this rhetoric, happy to see the MEK play such a prominent role. And so all of this points to, I think, a growing disaster that we're seeing unfolding, you know, before our eyes. And I think will start to take shape tomorrow afternoon when Trump makes his announcement on the Iran nuclear agreement. Everyone predicts he's going to tear it up, and that will effectively open the door, I think, to a very steady and gradual pathway towards some sort of military confrontation with Iran that will, I think, further destabilize the Middle East.
And, of course, the Iranian hardliners have sabotaged Rouhani's efforts to open up the country, which is what the young and the urban and educated and the women want in that country, because they keep arresting people. So there's a symbiosis between Trump and the hardliners. I wouldn't cross the street for Donald Trump. Do you think a young Iranian is going to take a bullet for this guy in the White House that most of the world despises and over half of this country is disgusted with? I mean, what an insanity. Anyway,
it's complete insanity. Totally agree with that, Ian, yeah.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the time, yeah.
And again, I've been speaking with Nada Hashemi, who is the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. He's the author of The People Reloaded, The Green Movement and the Struggle for Iran's Future and The Syria Dilemma. And his latest book is Sectarianization, Mapping the New Politics of the Middle East. We're going to take a brief station break and back with an analysis of what is behind the rise of oil, now up to $70 a barrel for the first time since 2014.